welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to a full-length episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live. Book of the Month is back again as a sponsor. Book of the Month is a book subscription service that vets hundreds of books each month and selects the five best to feature as their monthly picks. Members get to pick one or more of their five choices that get shipped to them directly each month. And today's guest will actually be sharing two books that were Book of the Month picks. So that works out really well. And she has made a gorgeous pie that is Book of the Month themed, and it's on her Instagram, and I will link to that in the show notes so you can take a look at it. This month, Book of the Month picked a book that was a little unusual for them. It was an espionage thriller called Hour of the Assassin by Matthew Quirk. And I used to read a ton of these types of books, but I haven't read something like this in a really long time. And I gotta say, this pick really surprised me for Book of the Month. It's totally out of the box for them, but that made me really intrigued. If they're gonna go this direction and pick a book that is so off-brand for them, I feel like it must be really, really good. And the premise of this book sounded really interesting to me. A trained assassin whose job is to find weaknesses in the security surrounding our top officials is framed for murder, and the story kind of goes from there. And these are based on real-life people that actually do have this job. And the Goodreads reviews for it were excellent. So I'm hoping that a Book of the Month stamped espionage thriller will be the right way to dip my toes back into this genre. So go check out Book of the Month's other books and subscribe at bookofthemonth.com. If you use my code Sarah's Bookshelves, you'll get your first month for $9.99, which is an awesome deal for a new hardcover book, which in many cases you can get before the actual release date. Before we get to our guest, I have one quick announcement to make. Now that the podcast has been around for over a year, I thought it was about time to do a survey. I would love y'all's feedback on what's going well, what could be improved, what types of guests you'd like to hear from, and what types of episodes you'd like to hear. It shouldn't take very long, and this is your opportunity to let me know anonymously everything that's on your mind. And there's a link in my Instagram bio and in the show notes. I really appreciate y'all taking the time to do this, and it will absolutely help the podcast moving forward. All right, today's guest is Steph Hockersmith. You may not know that name, but you definitely know her Instagram handle, which is at Pie Lady Books. Steph is a stay-at-home mom of two boys, ages 5 and 3, and she lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado. She has been gluten-free for about 13 years and has been baking gluten-free pies for about 12 years. And y'all, I didn't know this before she was coming on the podcast. This makes her Instagram account that much more astounding to me. She loves creating pie designs to go with books she's reading. And if you haven't already checked out her book pie pairings on Instagram, go do that immediately. Welcome, Steph.
Hi, Sarah. I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you for talking to me. I'm so excited to talk books and baking today.
Yes, me too. My favorite topics.
I put a call out to Instagram when we figured out that you were going to come on the show. And I asked what everybody wanted to hear from you. And I'm going to kick things off with the most asked question from my listeners, which, y'all, was overwhelmingly the most asked question. And I'm really glad that I asked you all because I'm embarrassed to say it was not on my original list of questions. And that is, who eats all the pie?
I knew that was going to be it. That's probably the question I get asked the most. I probably get asked that question every day. And I actually give them to family and friends. Pie is my husband's favorite dessert. So he tends to get first dibs. And then my parents also love pies. So then they kind of get the next round. And then I pass them off to my friends as they're available.
So do you and your kids ever eat the pies, or is it just your husband?
It's mainly my husband and my kids do. You know, This is a not super well-known fact about me, but pie is not my favorite dessert.
Ooh, interesting. What is your favorite dessert?
Probably like cake or cupcakes. I really love a good buttercream icing. I love eating cake. I don't like making them, but I love making pies and I don't like eating them. So it actually works out well for me. So I'm not tempted to eat, you know, 6 million pies every week.
So that's why you chose to feature pies on your Instagram versus cake or cookies or something.
Yeah, just because I really enjoyed making them. When I started making pies, I actually was inspired to make them because we went gluten-free. I was the one that was really sick. My husband didn't have an allergy, but he graciously went gluten-free for me so that we could just have a gluten-free household, and it made things so much easier for me. So one Thanksgiving, I thought, well, this is his first Thanksgiving without real pie, and I wanted to make it better for him. So I started making gluten-free pies, and it took me a couple years to get a recipe for a pie crust that I really love. Everyone loved it. It like became really popular, and my friends started ordering my pies, and my family started ordering my pies, and it kind of became what I was known for. So when I decided to start my Instagram account, I thought I wanted to feature books first and foremost, but baking was such a huge part of my life, especially the pie baking aspect of things, that I wanted to feature that in. So I've kind of been known as like the pie lady around my family and friends for years. And then I just thought, well, I'll just throw that in with the books.
You have a pie business, more or less. People can actually purchase pies from you.
Yes. I mean, it's out of my home. I don't have it like very advertised at the moment because I only have one oven and I didn't want to get too ahead of myself. So I usually make probably like 30 pies every Thanksgiving for orders for people. That's probably the most I've done. But then people will order them for birthdays, or the gluten-free community in Colorado Springs knows about me. So they'll order for like special occasions and things like that. And I'm kind of word of mouth at the moment. But my family and friends, well, they used to order from me more. Now they get them just because I'm making way more pies now than I used to.
They get the Instagram handoffs.
They get the Instagram handoffs. Exactly. Yes. And I actually, people ask me this a lot. I don't know if this is one of your questions or not, but I actually will tend to make like a crust in a filling, and then I do a design on top, and then I'll take a picture of that. I'll scrape it off. I'll do another design. Then sometimes I'll do a third design, and then I bake the final design.
That is one of the questions.
Okay, good. So I don't actually bake every single pie you see. I usually will utilize a base and a filling for a couple designs before I bake it, just so that because then eventually people do get sick of pies.
Right. Well, and also maximizing your time. I mean, this has got to not be a quick process. How long does it take you from start to finish?
For a pie design, usually I estimate about 2 hours to make the filling and everything. I'd say probably 2.5 hours. It depends on how detailed my design is. If I'm just doing a quick filling and a lattice, I can get that together in under an hour. But for the book design, since I'm doing color and I'm kind of thinking it through and doing a little more intricate work, it usually takes me about 2 hours to make a pie.
For your friends and family who purchase pies from you, do they ever request the intricate designs that you show on Instagram or something similar, like for a holiday or something special in their life?
I do have customers that have requested those designs. I had one gal saw one of my Christmas designs back in December, and she wanted that specific pie for her Christmas dinner. So I have had people request, but usually my friends and family just take whatever I give them. If they specifically will say, oh my goodness, that's my favorite of your designs, I'll try to make that for them for their order, just because I know that they loved it. But it kind of depends on how much time I have and how intricate the design is.
Sure. One question about color. How do you match your pie color to your book cover colors? Because you do a really good job with that.
Thank you. Thank you. That's actually been such a fun aspect of the process. It's really just like you would if you're painting a picture. So I'm not sure how much people know about dyeing pie dough. This was a recent development for me. Within the last year, I actually had a friend on Instagram, A Carried Affair. Her pie designs are phenomenal. I think her handle is A Carried Affair Designs.
Y'all, I'll link to that in the show notes for you as well.
She actually is the one that showed me about dyeing the pie dough, because I didn't ever love the painted on color look. She started making pies with color and I was like, oh, that's so clean and crisp and bright. And I love that. basically all you do is you put some food coloring into your pie dough and you knead it in, and it absorbs so well. I was shocked at how well the pie dough takes the color. So you're basically like mixing it in like you would for like a frosting. You're just kneading it instead of stirring it. What I do when I'm trying to match is I'll see what I need to do, and then I'll add a bit more white, or sometimes I'll mix the colors beforehand and then add them to the dough. So I'll use Anna Kay as an example. That's one of the pies I did, a book of the month book, though this last pick. That one took me a bit to get that blue just right because it's kind of a pinkish blue. And so I kept trying to get there, and finally I added some pink to it and it got to the right shade of blue. But that one took me a little bit longer than normal. It's actually kind of a fun process. It's like playing with clay or...
And do you have an art background, this all, or design background? I mean, you have this eye for design and color.
You are so sweet to say that. That's actually been the most shocking aspect of all of this. My mom is incredibly artistic, and my whole family have artistic elements. And I would have said up until probably I started this a year and a half ago that I had zero artistic ability whatsoever.
But you do. You just had to find the right venue for it.
I did. I just had to find, yeah, the right medium. And it was just crazy how now it's like, oh, I'm actually good at this. I really enjoy it. And so it was actually a huge surprise to me. So no, I have no art background. I've never thought of myself as artistically gifted in any way.
That's crazy. And do you sketch out your more complicated designs before you actually make the pie? Or does this kind of happen in the moment?
I do not. They have in the moment because I can't sketch. That's part of my artistic. And this is what's so funny is I've tried to actually sketch out designs before and I can't draw to save my life. But there's something that happens to me when I get an X-Acto knife in my hand and I'm messing with the pie dough that I'm able to freehand things far better than I could sketch them.
Oh, interesting. So you use an X-Acto knife. Do you have any cookie cutter kind of things you use, or is it everything freehand?
No, I do. I use a lot of cookie cutters, and fondant molds are kind of a little known secret. You can get those off of Amazon and they work great for pie dough. So I use a lot of molds and cookie cutters, but I do freehand a lot of different shapes, like my Such a Fun Age pie that I did for Kylie Reed's book. That was all freehanded. It just depends on the design I'm working on.
What about the birds you did for the Dear Edward pie?
Those were cookie cutters. So actually, some of them were freehanded, but most of them were cookie cutters. Yes, I did do a few freehand birds in there, but most of them.
So back to the gluten-free topic for a second. What's the big difference between a gluten-free pie crust and a regular pie crust? Like, what are the ingredients you use instead of the flour?
Kind of depends on what you're looking for. I'm really picky about the flavor of my pie. So I use a combination of white rice flour and tapioca flour. And then you have to throw some xanthan gum in there to help with the elasticity to keep it together a little bit more. And I actually use milk instead of cold water. I use cold milk, which is a little different. That helps add like a protein and a fat element to my dough that I wouldn't get otherwise, because the gluten essentially is a protein. And so what it adds to a normal dough is it keeps it elastic. Like, I don't know if you've seen people roll out their pie dough and then they're able to roll it onto their rolling pin and then roll it onto their pie pan. I cannot do that because my dough will fall apart. Gluten-free dough just tends to crumble. So adding the milk kind of gives me just like a little bit more elasticity.
How did you learn all this stuff?
Just trial and error.
Let's just be clear. You don't have a professional culinary background either.
No. Yeah, I went to school for like family and human services. So no part of this was ever, I've loved to bake since I was little. I was probably 5 or 6. And I saw a recipe for, I think there was like a picture of peanut butter cookies on the Crisco thing in my mom's pantry. And I thought, well, I could make those. That looks easy enough. So I decided to make peanut butter cookies. She was out visiting a neighbor friend. I'm not sure I was allowed to turn on the oven at the time. And she came home and she said, who brought these over? Because she said, they're perfect. And I said, I made them. And so after she got over the shock that I turned on the oven and used all the baking equipment, it became kind of my thing that they were these cookies that I had created. And I was really proud of myself and I loved it. I baked a lot of cookies growing up and different things. And then, like I said, when I became gluten-free and I wanted to make my husband a pie for Thanksgiving, that's when the love of pie baking came into play. I do enjoy eating a slice of pie, but it would never be my first choice for a dessert. But I really love the process. It's so soothing to get the dough in the pie pan and make the filling and do the design on top. It's really calming for me. So I just enjoy that whole process.
It sounds like it would be a nice combination of repetitive steps that become a little bit like muscle memory for you, and also this extra really creative part of it, which is the crust that you do to match the book covers.
Yes, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that.
I always think that cooking and baking are so very different. Like, I love to cook. I do not love to bake. I don't like to measure. I don't like not being able to taste along the way. So do you also like to cook?
I don't dislike cooking. I definitely would classify myself as a baker instead of a cook. I am getting better at cooking as I go. And I definitely enjoy the freedom of just like throwing this in here, you know, with baking. I would probably say I classify myself as a lazy baker. I always use really good ingredients and everything is made from scratch, but I do soften my butter in the microwave sometimes, you know, like I'll take shortcuts.
So your kids are 5 and 3. Do they bake with you? Are they in the house when you're doing this? How does that all work?
Yes, they love helping me make pies. My oldest used to help me a lot, and he loves cutting out the designs and stuff. Like I usually will give my kids their own pie dough to play with while I'm working. And it actually works out well because most people don't know this, but Play-Doh actually has gluten in it. And so we've never had Play-Doh in the house. And so that's kind of become their Play-Doh is they'll say, I want a blue dough or I want pink dough. And they just kind of make shapes with it. My oldest son, Cooper, has always loved to bake with me and is really good at like cracking the eggs and stirring things in. And he really enjoys the process. And my younger son, Bishop, is incredibly artistic. I mean, he got whatever artistic genes were laying dormant inside of me and way more. I mean, he can cut out pie dough shapes with cookie cutters that I struggle with. The designs he comes up with are incredible. So he's only 3 right now, so he just kind of designs things on the countertop, but I'm sure it will be no time before he's far surpassed me in ability with how he designs pies.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have a built-in assistant before too long.
I mean, Bishop's first question every morning is, can we make pies yet? I mean, it's his favorite thing to do. So I stand at the counter and he sits at the stools on the other side of the counter and he'll just sit there with me the whole time, just making the dough and playing with the dough and cutting out shapes. And he loves it. So it's really fun.
That's awesome. And going back to something you said earlier about the Play-Doh, can you touch gluten?
Okay, I can touch it, but the worry gets when if I touch it and then I touch my food or I forget to like wash my hands or things like that that I could ingest.
Oh, okay.
The pie dough is very multi-purpose in our house. It's my creativity, their creativity. It takes lots of different forms and it's edible. So if they decide to eat some, it's like no big deal.
I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. I'm going to finish up our discussion portion with a couple questions from listeners that we did not cover earlier. We did end up covering a few of the listener questions. I'll just tell y'all what those are in case that was your question and you were waiting to hear the answer, just so you know that it was covered earlier. So the ones that we already covered were, are the pies actually baked when you photograph them, which is sometimes, correct?
Yeah. Well, most of the pies I photograph on Instagram are pre-baked. They're before the bake because baking tends to take away some of the crispness of the design, you know, when it changes the color and stuff. So most of the pies you see on Instagram are right before they're baked. And I get the question a lot, can we see them baked? And I often forget to take pictures of them because, like I said, I'm running around with 2 young boys and I'm busy. And so half the time I'm making a pie right before I lose the light from outside. I take all of my pictures outside. And so I'll be like racing against the sun to try to get a pie done. And so then I'll take the picture for the book to post and then I'll bake it. And then I have no more light in the day and I forget to take a picture. My kitchen doesn't photograph very well.
What time of day is your ideal light time?
right now, depends on the time of year, but right now it's like 4:30 to 5:30 in the evening.
Because you don't want direct light, right?
Right. It's like the perfect like dusky color where it comes out clear, but it's not too bright. There's a couple hours early afternoon that I could fit it in. So most of them are pre-baked. And then I often forget to take pictures of the baked pies, but I do bake the pies.
That would be cool to see a before and after.
Yes. And I keep telling myself that I need to make my pies earlier in the day so that I can remember to do that, because a lot of people want to see what they look like baked.
I'm glad I actually mentioned that, because it turns out we kind of hadn't answered that question in full.
Yeah.
Is every picture a new pie entirely, or do you reuse bases and just change out the tops? And I think we did cover this, right? Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes, I do reuse bases. Yeah.
And two questions that we have not covered. Are there any pie failures that you just ended up not being able to show on Instagram?
Yes. It doesn't happen quite as often anymore, but I tried making a pie for, I can't even remember the name of the book now, but it was a really beautiful cover. And I tried doing like a swirly color design. And at first it was like, okay, but then the dough got too warm. And then, you know, if you mix colors too much, then they just like get black. And so it just did not work out. I finished the pie and I looked at it and I was like, oh, this is sloppy. So no, I ended up not getting that pie done. And if I'm being honest, probably 90% of the pies that I post, I'm not 100% happy with, but I'm such a perfectionist. And, you know, I have this design in my mind. And so I think, oh, I could have done this or I could have done this, but I posted anyway because I can't toss them all. No, there definitely have been some fails. And I get really discouraged when that happens, because I've spent like a good 2 hours working on it. And then when it doesn't work out, it's like, oh man. So, but I think as I've done it, the longer I've done it, it happens less and less.
Do you post every day?
Yes.
So you make at least a showable pie a day.
Yeah. There are some days I skip, but yeah, I tend to make probably like 5 to 7 showable pies a week. And so I bake probably like 3 of those.
So when do you have time to read books?
I do a lot of audiobooks.
While you're baking?
Yes. And that's actually been really special for me. I'll end up remembering what I was doing on a pie at a certain point in a book. And so they kind of end up connecting. And there have been times I cry into my pies.
Aww.
Just, I'm so moved by a story. And so it's become a really special time for me to just listen to my books and make the pies, especially if I'm finishing up listening to the book that I'm making the pie for. That's always really fun too, because then I'm able to just like put in a little extra design or feeling or love into what I'm doing because I'm really moved by the story or something like that. So it's become really fun. I do read in the evenings after my kids go to bed, but I listen to a ton of audiobooks.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And has there ever been a book that you just, a cover you loved, but like you just could not come up with the right pie design for it?
Not yet. I will say I really struggle with faces. I haven't branched into trying to do like faces. It's very hard to do. There's an artist called, pie artist called The Pious. That's her handle. And she is phenomenal. And she can sketch out people's faces and it looks really, really good. And she like kind of paints her pies and does a really excellent job. I have not gotten to that point because I don't tend to sketch a ton. I just haven't figured out quite how to do that in a good way. I've seen it done, but if it's not done well, it just kind of looks weird. And I don't want to mess up anyone's faces. So for example, book of the month book, You Are Not Alone, which you recommended. Didn't you recommend that one?
I did. Yeah.
Yes. I loved it. I love that. So that, you know, has faces on the front. So that one's a little trickier. So I ended up doing like a geometric pattern. And so that's kind of where I go when there's a design on the book that I can't replicate. I will do something with the same colors or something that kind of makes the book pop, but doesn't look exactly like the cover.
All right. One last listener question before we get to your book recommendations.
Okay.
And that is, if you had to rank them, books or pie, what comes first?
I'm going to have to say books. I just love my books so much.
And actually, now that we know you don't even love to eat pie, that's an easy ranking to do.
Exactly. I mean, there's something so comforting about a good slice of cherry pie with a cup of coffee. I will always love that, but I don't think I could survive one day without my books. So I'm going to probably have to say books.
I agree, obviously. All right, let's get into your book recommendations. As usual, Steph is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she does not love, and one upcoming release that she is excited about. Tell me about the first old book you love.
The first old book I love is called From Sand and Ash by Amy Harmon. And I would probably say that's my favorite book.
Ever.
Ever. Yeah, probably.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's like kind of right up there with The Count of Monte Cristo and Wuthering Heights in my mind in terms of books that I've loved. It was one of those books that I read that I was like, wow, so many aspects of it were incredibly moving. And I just ended the book just like thinking that was incredible. Amy Harmon is an author that she's written probably like 15 books, I think. Anyway, but she is, I feel like, one of the underrated geniuses in the author world. I would read her grocery list. Her books are phenomenal. She just can't write a bad book. And she writes all different genres. She writes fantasy. She writes romance, contemporary romance. She does historical fiction. And From Sand and Ash is her first historical fiction that she did. And it's based in Italy during World War II. And it kind of takes the perspective of the Catholic Church's involvement in World War II and helping the Jews in Italy. And that was kind of a perspective I hadn't seen before in reading World War II books. And she does it so beautifully. And the characters are so well drawn. And there's just so many moving moments throughout it. And I read that book and immediately I was like, well, she's a favorite author because it was incredible.
There's a bit of a love story in this too, right?
Yes, yes. All of her books feature a love story. They're not always like the main aspect, but she always does put a love story within the book. And that one, it's a beautiful, beautiful love story.
And is this based on real events?
She does a ton of research for her books. And so all of the events that occur are very well researched and accurate, but the main characters in the book are fictional. She has a priest that is featured throughout the book, or maybe he's a rabbi. She dedicates the book to someone, I think it's a priest, and he actually was a real character. And what's cool is his daughter ended up, once the book got published in Israel a couple years ago, someone lent his daughter the book and she didn't even realize it had been dedicated to her dad or that it featured her dad. And he did just incredible things. So she was extremely moved by the story. So there are historical characters within the book woven through that she researched very well, but the two main characters are fictional.
So there's a lot of World War II books out there.
Yes.
Why did this one in particular really stand out to you?
I think mainly because I hadn't read anything about all that the Catholic Church did for the Jews within Italy. I haven't read a ton of World War II books that took place within Italy. And just the perspectives that she pulled from were ones that I hadn't read before. But it was just kind of a new take. And I didn't realize just kind of the underground networks that took place within Italy that the Catholic Church and the Vatican did to help the Jews. It was just really incredible. I think just the love story as well. It was so beautiful and hopeful and redemptive. And it just moved me in a way that I think that's what helped me never forget. You know, the characters I think in a book are the ones that you just really are drawn to a story because of, you know, like the events can be super captivating and well drawn, but the characters are what stand out. And she just drew these characters so well. And Eva, the main character, is just such a strong, incredible woman.
I don't read a ton of World War II fiction, so I had not heard of this book. So it's not that surprising that I hadn't heard of it, but it has a really high rating on Goodreads. It's 4.39 stars.
Yes. People don't know about her as much as I think they should, because she really is incredible. And this is, I would say, probably her best book. It's phenomenal.
And y'all, it is available on Kindle Unlimited for free right now. So that was From Sand and Ash by Amy Harmon, came out in 2016. All right, tell me about the second old book you love, which is actually a two-book series.
Well, the first book is The Book of Ivy, and the second book is The Revolution of Ivy by Amy Engel. And she is the author of The Familiar Dark, which is an adult novel coming out at the end of March. I think that the Ivy books were her first books. It's a YA duo. And I read them a couple years ago. It was right when I had started reading again. I was pregnant with my second son. And I just fell in love with the characters. It definitely kind of has like a dystopian Hunger Games vibe. And so for people who love the Hunger Games, it's not quite the same scenario, but it's essentially these two families are the head of this town, and this woman has to marry the Ivy has to marry Bishop Latimer, the head son or whatever. And so it's like kind of an arranged marriage, but her family has been plotting to take over and to kill Bishop. So that's like her thing. She's betrothed to him, but she has been plotting his death, essentially. There's just a lot of details, and she fights to free the girls from these arranged marriages. A lot of them have to get married really young. So it kind of has like a Hunger Games vibe with the younger marriages. You're not going into the Hunger Games, but you know, you still have got these young girls starting a life that they hadn't planned on. And it's just a really cool world that she developed. And I really loved the relationship between Ivy and Bishop. And I ended up naming my son Bishop because I loved the character so much. I was reading the books. I read it twice while I was pregnant. And I was like, oh my goodness, I love his character. And I think I want to name my son Bishop. And I wasn't sure my husband would go for it. I thought I'd have to sneak it in as a middle name, but then he ended up being on board. So they're a really fun duo. They're captivating, quick reads, and I just love a good romance, and that's just a beautiful romance between them.
I also loved her book, The Roanoke Girls, which is also for adults, super messed up.
Yeah, that's what I heard. So I was a little nervous about it.
Very like Flowers in the Attic vibe.
Yes.
But anyway, when I was reading about these, I saw a comparison to the two families are sort of like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Like they hate each other. Obviously, since one's trying to murder the child of the other.
Yeah.
But I never saw comparisons to Hunger Games, but that's what jumped out at me just from reading the synopsis. I was like, oh, this sounds very Hunger Games-esque. So I'm glad to hear you thought that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the feel. If you enjoy like a good kind of dystopian feel of fighting for justice and kind of overthrowing the world as it is, that vibe is here. It's not quite as detailed and as the Hunger Games, and it's only a 2-book series, and the focus is on Bishop and Ivy. There's a wall, and you can get thrown out of the wall, and you're essentially like living on your own in the wilderness. So there's a lot of just kind of those vibes of where you've got this tight-knit community that functions a certain way, but it's not actually a great way, and so they're trying to kind of overthrow that. But it does have two feuding families. Anyway, it's all very interesting. I loved it. I thought it was a fun read.
And I heard it had a cliffhanger ending. I guess the first book did, but both books are out. So you don't have to worry about that if it's an issue for you.
Exactly.
All right. So that was The Book of Ivy is the first book, and The Revolution of Ivy is the second book by Amy Ingle. And those came out in 2014 and 2015. Tell me about the first new book you love.
The first new book would be The Giver of Stars by Jojo Moyes. And it's gotten a lot of publicity because it was a Reese's Book Club pick and it was a Book of the Month pick. But it's so worth it. I mean, it is such an incredible story of women sticking together. It features the Packhorse Librarians of Kentucky back when Eleanor Roosevelt was trying to promote literacy throughout the country, especially in the more rural areas. And so she would fund these library projects, and these women would essentially load up these donkeys with books and carry them out to these super remote homes and communities, especially in like poorer areas of the nation. And I thought that was such a fascinating story. I hadn't even really heard much about the Packhorse Librarians. And so this take on it is really beautiful just because she features, I think it's like 5 different women, but the main focus is on 2 different women that just come from totally different backgrounds, but need this library. And it's a beautiful story about just the power of books and how they change lives. I just loved every aspect of it.
Did you read The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek as well?
I did not, but my mom did, actually. And she said that that focus seemed to be more on the racism aspect of that area.
Oh, okay.
She informed me she felt like all claims of plagiarism were not to be concerned about because it's hard. You're writing about a specific time frame where this very unique situation is occurring. You're going to have overlap. But I think the perspectives and focuses of each story are very different from what I've heard, at least.
And y'all, what we're talking about is there was a book that came out about 5 months before The Giver of Stars that was called The Book Woman of Troublesome Creek. And she came out to the media with some, I don't know if I want to use accusations of plagiarism that Jojo Moyes kind of, I guess she just pointed out similarities between the Pack Horse Librarians of Kentucky, which were a real life thing, and how JoJo Moyse wrote about them as well. So there was kind of some talk about that for a while. It's definitely died down.
It has died down. And I think because when, and again, I can't totally speak to it because I haven't read both books, but from what I've heard, it definitely seems like, I think once you read it, you're going to see similarities. You know, a woman writing alone in a remote area is always going to be risky, you know, especially in that time frame. There are going to be things that happen. And so I think you're going to have overlaps in circumstances. I think JoJo Moyse has been working on this story for a long time. I think she visited Kentucky several years ago.
She said that she had never read The Book Woven of Troublesome Creek. Her publisher said that nobody at the publisher had read the book.
Exactly. I don't think there was any proof of those claims. And, you know, coincidences happen. You know, there's only so many things you can write about. And there's going to be overlap. You know, I've read a couple books at times that I think, oh, this is really similar to this book. And unfortunately, they, you know, were published around the same time. But I think it was probably more coincidence than anything, and kind of an unfortunate that it was two books about the same thing coming out around the same time. But I think that The Book Woman of Troublesome Creek is much more focused on the blue people of Kentucky and how they were treated. Whereas JoJo Moyse's book is about women and that time and setting up the library and kind of the impact the books had on people's lives.
Yeah, I have not read either of these books, but that's what I read about the controversy was more or less just that.
Yeah.
All right. So that was The Giver of Stars by JoJo Moyse. And that came out in October of 2019. And you might still be able to get that as an add-on at Book of the Month.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure it's sold out yet.
All right. Tell me about the second new book you love.
The second new book is The Girl with the Louding Voice, which was a Book of the Month pick for February. And it was also a Read with Jenna pick. And it is phenomenal. I actually listened to the audiobook. And if you like audiobooks, that's definitely one to do. You know what? Both of those, The Giver of Stars and The Girl with the Louding Voice. Julia Whelan narrates The Giver of Stars and she nails it. I mean,
people love her.
Every single voice, she just nails it. And then The Girl with the Louding Voice, oh, it is so moving to get to hear Adonis' story and her voice. I really enjoyed that audio. But either way, whether you like to read or listen, it's just a phenomenal story about a girl, I think she's 14, in Nigeria, who her dad had to essentially sell her for marriage because they needed money. And it wasn't a super uncommon thing to happen in her village, but she wanted an education. And her mom had, before her mom passed, had always made her dad promise that he would keep her in school. And she kept just saying, you need to pursue school. You need to have a voice. If you go to school, you'll have a voice. And anyway, so it's basically about the story of this girl pursuing, trying to fight for her education so that she'll have a voice in the world. And it's so moving. It's just probably one of my favorite books of all time.
It's getting really good reviews.
And she's so optimistic. It's just a beautiful story. She really represents like the best of us, just the best of humanity. So it's definitely probably going to be one of my favorite books of the year, easily.
And how did you feel about the parts where her voice is written in sort of broken English? I know some people struggled with that a little bit and then others did not at all. So how did you feel about that?
That actually didn't bother me because I really enjoy when a story feels very realistic and feels like that's actually how the character would speak. And at the beginning of the story, she had only gone through some of primary school. She was kind of, I think, at the very end of primary school. And so she had a lot to learn. And that's probably one of the largest aspects of the story is her working on her English and seeking knowledge wherever she can and trying to improve how she speaks and the clarity with which she speaks. And there was a really moving part where she talks about how someone who was more educated than her ended up making some foolish decisions. And she just was kind of coming to the realization of it doesn't matter if you can speak English well. That doesn't mean that you have a good head on your shoulders. It's not a proof of intelligence, you know, and kind of what matters is on the inside. And it's just really moving. So I found that aspect of the story very important, I guess, to her character.
And probably comes across even more powerfully on the audio.
Yes, absolutely.
That was The Girl with the Louding Voice by Abby Dare, and that came out in February of this year. All right, let's talk about the book you did not love.
Oh, Cross Your Heart by Sarah Pinborough. People loved that book. And I read it, I think it was not this last fall, but the fall before. And oh, I struggled with that story.
What was your big struggle with it?
I think the characters were a little too extreme. The characters weren't super likable for me to begin with. And then just the way the plot went, it felt a little extreme. It didn't feel realistic. And then the twist at the end was so ridiculous. I was like, there's no way. This makes no sense. Like we said before, I'm pretty picky with my thrillers. I just felt like she was trying to pick the most random possibility for a twist so that you'd be caught off guard. But it was like so random that you just wanted to like roll your eyes and you're kind of like, okay, this is ridiculous. And I'm not even quite sure why I finished it, but I think I was like, I just want to get to the end because people kept talking about a twist. And so I wanted to know what it was.
I feel like that might be her style.
Yes.
Having the very outrageous twist because she is the author that wrote Behind Her Eyes, which was a pretty buzzy book a couple years ago. And I felt the exact same way about the twist in Behind Her Eyes. I wanted to throw the book across the room. I felt like it was a cop-out.
Yes.
I felt like it was outrageous. And I have not read anything by her since, kind of because of that. And that's just my personal preference with thrillers. I don't like to feel like the twist is completely out of left field.
I totally agree. I think it's very artistic when an author can write in a good twist that not only really surprises you, but also makes sense. Like the end of The Last Time I Lied, or even The Silent Patient.
Yep. I read The Silent Patient and I did like that ending.
Yes. And I just felt like that was just so artfully done. Like you're like, whoa, I did not see that coming. But then you're like, oh, you know, I get how they did that. And that takes skill. It's hard to do. And I think not every thriller needs that necessarily. You know, it can just be a really captivating story that keeps you kind of on the edge of your seat. But yeah, when an author throws something in from left field, it does feel like a cop out. Kind of like, I'm just really trying for shock value here.
Right. If y'all heard the episode with Liz Moore, which was, I can't remember the episode number off the top of my head, but it was pretty recently. And she wrote Long Bright River, and she talks about a twist or an ending feeling earned.
I like that.
And that's kind of the word that she used to describe what we're talking about, which I liked that as well. All right. So that was Cross Your Heart by Sarah Pinborough. And let's talk about the upcoming release that you're excited about. I feel like a lot of people are going to be excited about this one.
Yes. Home Before Dark by Riley Sager. It comes out at the end of June, and I cannot wait. He has become my go-to author. I think I read The Last Time I Lied first, and I was just blown away by that ending. And I still think that's probably my favorite of his books that he's written was The Last Time I Lied. But I enjoyed Final Girls, and I enjoyed Lock Every Door. And so I'm really excited for his next release.
And I think we can almost guarantee this is going to be a June Book of the Month pick.
Oh, for sure. I think he'll be the first four-peat.
He was the first three-peat.
Yes.
And Siobhan Jones said on my podcast that basically his books sell really well for them and we'll see them on Book of the Month as long as he doesn't stumble.
Right. I think there would be a riot if his books was not a Book of the Month because everyone's anticipating it. So, and people collect them, you know, like I have all three of his books in the Book of the Month version and it's kind of fun to have the collection of those books. So.
And it has been optioned for film.
Yes, I'm so excited for that.
By the producers of Stranger Things.
That's going to be amazing.
And there's a ghost element in this one, right?
I think that there is, which I'm excited for. I think that'll be fun.
All right. Again, that was Home Before Dark by Riley Sager coming out June 30th and probably be able to get your hands on it early through Book of the Month.
Yes. Oh, so excited.
All right. You ready to play Rate It?
I am ready.
I like to end every episode with a lightning round game called Rate It, where I throw out five bookish things, and they could be anything book-related, and in your case, pie-related, too.
Okay.
And you rate it either one or five stars. It's just like your opinion about something. So it's a love-hate thing, like how you would rate a book, but you cannot use two, three, or four stars. All right, number one, choosing a book to read solely because it has an amazing cover that you would like to make a pie to go with.
Five. I do that a lot.
Are there books that you make pies for that you have not actually read?
Yes, there are. I tend to like to feature books that I love with pies just because, you know, I want them to have that extra attention. But I am really inspired by a cover. I think it's really beautiful. I definitely will just feature the book with the pie if it's something I'm making at the time or if I'm really excited about it.
Okay, number two. This is going to be an easy one, but I had to ask you about it anyway. Being reposted now twice by Read with Jenna on Instagram.
Five, for sure.
Did they ask you first or did they just do it?
They just do it. I mean, and I tag them. So I feel like that's kind of giving permission. That's been really exciting. I think the first time I got reposted by Book of the Month, I screamed for a while.
Book of the Month better have reposted your Book of the Month pie.
Yes, they did.
Did Read with Jenna repost your Dear Edward pie?
No.
What? They made a mistake with that.
Yeah, I've made a couple pies for them. I did the Dutch House before she was connected with Book of the Month. And so I think the ones they've reposted are, they did one of my letterboard pies.
Girl with the Louding Voice quote was today.
And then the Girl with the Louding Voice quote. Yep. So they've done letterboard. They've actually never done one of my book pies. And the Girl with the Louding Voice pie that I did for the book is probably my favorite pie I've ever done. And that one didn't get reposted. So I was kind of bummed about that. But I still love that pie. It's beautiful.
I feel like they're missing the boat here.
Yeah.
So a one for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Number three, publishing your own cookbook.
Okay. I am not a recipe developer. So I've never actually wanted to publish a cookbook because I kind of get intimidated at the idea of making recipes. If I really sat and thought about it, I probably could come up with some pie recipes. But I actually was speaking to Eve Rodsky, the author of Fair Play, and she had a brilliant idea, actually, about doing kind of a coffee table book that features my pies and then has like blurbs from the authors as to like what their favorite desserts are growing up or like a story from the author. So like featuring the author of the book that I made the pie for. And I was like, that's brilliant. That actually sounds really fun.
That's brilliant.
Five, if it's that idea. One, if it's me developing my own recipes. I wouldn't mind doing like a pie art book.
Yeah.
And I could feature some of my favorite pie recipes, but I only have a couple that like I've come up with on my own or I have family recipes. Most of my recipes I get from like Food Network or things like that.
Right. You're more into the design part of it.
Yeah, I love baking and I love a really good recipe. So I make sure all my food tastes good. I think all my creativity gets eaten up in the actual designing of the pie.
That makes sense. All right, number four, opening a bake shop / bookstore, retail store.
Five, I would love that.
Oh.
And I would love for it to be primarily books. I don't know. Have you read any Jenny Colgan books?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so she wrote The Bookshop on the Corner, and she writes a lot of really fun, like British, I guess you could say chick lit, women's fiction. She writes for Doctor Who. She's just witty and funny and amazing, and I love her books. Anyway, she always paints these beautiful pictures of these little bake shops, and I would love to have like a bookshop that features really delicious desserts, and you can come get really delicious pie, but the focus is sitting with your coffee and your book. But I'd also sell my pies. I would love that. I wish that I was also independently wealthy and could just pull that off right now.
Yes, a retail store is expensive. Maybe you need to do the coffee table book, sell it, make some money, and then do the retail store.
And then do the retail store, exactly.
All right, number five, posting pictures of yourself on Instagram.
Ooh, one. I struggle with that. I really struggle with that. And that's why I have a hard time talking in my stories. I don't think I've ever gotten on my stories and just chatted with people about my books. It's stressful, for sure. So I'm working on it. I have been working on setting up an IGTV video of me making one of my pies. And so I'm working on getting that set up soon so that people can see me make a pie. And I haven't decided yet if I'm going to show my face or if I'm just going to show my hands. I haven't decided.
I think you should totally do that. That makes so much sense for you.
Yeah. And I think they will be shocked at actually how easy some of it is. I think the big problem, and sorry, this is off the subject, but people get so intimidated by pie dough, which I totally get because it can be very difficult to work with. But I think once you get used to it, it's such a fun and easy medium. And there's so many things you can do to really create a fun pie. I've had some opportunities to do pie designs that might be featured on camera. I'm excited to show people how easy it is to actually create a really beautiful show-stopping design that doesn't take a super long time. So I'm excited to show people that. I have some plans in the works to get some things online. And so I'll have to get used to showing my face.
That is so exciting. And I feel like such a perfectly natural progression for you.
Thank you. I actually was contacted by Good Morning America because they've had a book club, I think, for a little while, but they just started their Instagram book club account a little while ago. And they contacted me and want me to make a book pie for In 5 Years, which releases on March 10th. So that's super exciting. So there's a chance that my pies might be featured on GMA on March 10th.
And y'all, this is airing after March 10th, so it might have already happened, but we're recording before the date.
Yes. So I'm hoping.
And are they paying you for this?
No, but, you know, I mean, it's...
I was just curious whether how that actually works.
No. I'm actually probably paying them since if I fly out there and all that stuff. But I'm like, oh man, the opportunity to have my pies featured on GMA.
No, you have to do that. Well, this has been amazing. By the time this airs, you'll probably be really famous.
I don't know. This journey of making pies with books has taken me much further already than I could have ever imagined. So I'm extremely grateful for that.
People that are on Bookstagram can kind of run together. You just stand out so much.
Thank you. That's so sweet.
I've loved being able to talk to you today.
It's been so fun. I've loved it. Thanks for having me on.
So tell everybody where to find you online.
Okay, so you can find me at Pie Lady Books on Instagram, and I am in the process of setting up a blog page, but that is not up yet. But you can watch my Instagram account for updates on the blog page, which the blog page will feature more how-to videos and kind of more pictures of me actually making the pies. So that'll be fun. That's kind of my next project.
All right, well, we'll keep a lookout for that. Everybody, the March Superlatives episode for patrons will air at the end of the month, and it will include Steph's picks for categories like first ever book pie collaboration and the pie that made her want to pull her hair out. If you'd like to get this bonus episode plus other bonus episodes, you can support the show for $5 a month on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. Next week will be a mini episode featuring Sarah Verity Kalika. I'm hoping I pronounce her name right. She is known on Instagram as C's_the_page. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at sarahsshelves, on Instagram at sarahsbookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.